Subcommittee of Ways and Means to order. I appreciate people being here today. Today we had a day in our schedule, and since we've heard already from some things through the Attorney General's Office and Crime Victims Assistance that are funded through the Criminal Fines and Assessments account, this is a policy issue that we changed during the 2001 legislative session. And we made some substantial changes in how the money was put out and how the funds worked. I made commitments during that session too to come back and look at it if it didn't work out the way we thought it was going to, and I made those commitments, of course, only personally, but I think a lot of people who were involved in that process were committed to really taking a look at where we were going and what was going on. So what I wanted to do, and the intent of the meeting today, was there are many programs in the criminal justice arena that are funded through the criminal fines and assessments account, and what I was trying to do was give the committee just an overview of the criminal fines and assessments account as to where it is today. I know that Representative Williams has a policy committee and intends to discuss that, and after the presentation today I'll talk to individual members if they want, or we can maybe talk a little bit about what's going on or concerns that may have been raised or identified as a result of this. But it's kind of just not to set the new policy going forward, but just to give everyone, raise the flag right now and show everyone where we're at and expose everyone to how the CFA works and the mechanics of it. So Bill McGee is here from DAS to assist us and take us through a presentation, as well as Susan Kaufman from the courts who does the forecasting, and the courts are really who collect the criminal fines and assessments on the front end. Susan, are you going to take the lead on this? Susan's going to take the lead on it. There's also many other people in the room who've been involved in this at various points in time. So, thanks. Bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bill McGee from DAS Budget Management Division, and I'd like to, as the Chair said, take you through a discussion of how the criminal fines and assessment account is handled in the Governor's 2003-05 budget. Page 2 just summarizes the issues of the criminal fines and assessment account. That account includes revenues that are received by the circuit courts, the justice courts, and municipal courts from persons who are convicted of criminal offenses, violations, and infractions other than parking tickets. A portion of the CFAA revenues is transferred to the general fund for general purpose expenditures, and the remainder is transferred to the public safety fund to support a variety of state and local programs. In this session, you'll see Senate Bill 5513 that establishes the split of what proportion of the CFA revenues goes to the general fund and what proportion goes to the public safety fund, and then also makes specific allocation of dollars to individual programs according to statutorily determined priorities. This is similar to the process that you deal with lottery funds by. You make an allocation, and then you have individual agency budget bills in which you establish expenditure limitations given the agency's authority to spend those dollars. So page 3 just gives you a little bit of history on where criminal fines and assessment dollars have been allocated over the last several biennia. Starting at the top of the page shows you the programs that have pretty much been CFAA funded all along. Operations of the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, State Police Training, Department of Justice Criminal Injuries Compensation Account, and the Child Abuse Multidisciplinary Intervention Account, also referred to as CAMI, that's been originally at Department of Human Services and recently transferred to Department of Justice. As you see, other than that, there's been a lot of changes from biennium to biennium. In 93-95, there were a number of transportation and natural resource allocations that were eliminated. A number of human services, public safety programs were added over the biennia. And in the statutory change in the process that Representative Patrick alluded to, some programs were continued, others were transferred to the general fund along with the revenues that would support them. So there were no longer other funds programs after that period.
Representative Butler. I need a little bit more basic information. These are revenues that are imposed through the circuit courts, justice courts, and municipal courts for folks convicted of criminal offenses, violations and infractions other than parking. So if I get a speeding ticket, is there an assessment on top of, I get a $50 ticket, then what's the assessment? I need to get a feel for the lowest common denominator here.
Okay. Well, I will sort of take you through some of the components of this, but if you do get a speeding ticket, you would receive a unitary assessment allocation on top of that, and the amount of that is, jump forward, for a violation, that would be $35 on top of whatever your speeding ticket fine is.
Why don't we stop here? Brad, do you want to come up and just speak real quickly to explain to Representative Butler?
Yeah, I need to know the amounts we're talking about as we go through this.
Chair Patridge, Representative Butler, for the record, my name is Brad Swank. I'm counsel, special counsel for government relations for the State Court Administrator's Office, and I've been involved with the unitary assessment process for about 14 or 15 years. It was our original bill. If you get tagged for speeding, Representative Butler, the officer writes you a ticket on it. That ticket has one amount. It's called a base fine. Okay? And the base fine amount is based on a schedule that we put out. There's a statutory formula that determines what the base fine, what goes into making up the base fine. And the officer writes that amount, and it's the same for the same offense statewide, supposed to be, for violations. And speeding is a violation. And in that base fine amount, the formula that we use to make up that base fine amount that you adopted, there's a certain amount of what's called unitary assessment, there's a certain amount of what's called fine, and there's a certain amount of county assessment. Now, when the person pays that fine, those designations determine where that revenue goes. The unitary assessment on all offenses, whether they're from a justice court, a municipal court, or a circuit court, all go to the CFAA. Okay? The fine amount of money gets split 50-50. 50% of the fine amount of money goes to the jurisdiction of the court that's processing the case, and 50% of the money goes to the jurisdiction of the officer that issued the ticket. So if it was a municipal city police officer citing into a municipal court, they're going to keep 100% of that fine portion of this chunk of money. And finally, the county assessment goes to county, and it goes to the county whether we collect it, whether municipal court collects it, whether Justice of the Peace court
collects it. All counties have assessments, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, it's set by statute. It's something you adopt.
Okay.
It's and these are all statutorily required amounts. So we put together there's a base fine schedule. The officer writes an amount. Now the officer's stuck with the base fine amount. The court can call somebody in and say, this is your 10th speeding ticket. We want you in front of us. And we want you in front of us so we can impose a higher amount of fine, because the base fine amount is lower than the maximum assessment that courts can, maximum money amount that courts can impose. And if they call the person in, then they can impose a higher amount, and that amount also gets divided up as required by statute between the fine amount and the unitary assessment amount and the county fine amount. And the unitary assessment amount for violations is always $35, unless the court reduces it, which there's a long story behind that. And the fine amount can vary, and the county assessment amount by statute varies depending upon the amount of fine that's imposed. The more fine, the higher the county assessment. So these are the basic. Has that helped?
Yes.
And the criminal fines and assessments account is the repository for the unitary assessments that are imposed. So it's $35 for the violation.
Yeah. Chair Patridge, it's also, CFAA is a bigger thing.
Right.
Because for the counties, if you go to a justice court or municipal court, they get to keep their portion of the fines. But when the state court imposes a fine, we don't just send the unitary assessment to the CFAA. We send the fine portion that the state gets. That goes into the CFAA. If there are court costs that are imposed by the court, and we impose them, that goes to the CFA. If we recoup from indigent defense, that goes to the CFAA. If the person posts bail on a misdemeanor or felony, a security release amount, and they forfeit their security release amount, that goes to the CFAA unless the Attorney General's office grabs it first to use it to pay for child support. And most of what we collect on the criminal side, not just the unitary assessment, goes into the CFA. So there are a number of different kinds of funds flowing in to this account.
So basically, the last fine I got, I think, was back when they told me we got to charge you something extra for the DPSST. I think the justice told me that they were collecting something for to train our officers. I said, well, I want to salute to that. I really didn't. My angst is that the unitary assessment for this infraction right now under this arrangement is always $35. The fine is split 50-50 between the jurisdiction and the CFAA.
Chair Patrick, Representative Butler. The fine portion is split 50-50 between the jurisdiction of the court that's processing the case and the jurisdiction of the citing officer. So if a state police officer cites into a municipal court, state gets half of the money because it was a state police officer, and the city gets half of the money for the fine portion because it's the city municipal court that's processing it.
Okay, now that raises a question then. So a state trooper has the ability to cite someone into a municipal court, and that would then determine where half of that goes. Now, if that state trooper says, wait a minute, I've got a circuit court which isn't going to take this, so there's no reason to cite into that, then if there's a municipal court available, they would cite into that?
Chair Patridge, Representative Butler, currently municipal courts and circuit courts have what's called concurrent jurisdiction over all traffic, which means that generally it's the citing officer that gets to decide which it's going to be cited into. Our experience is that, by and large, municipal officers tend to cite into, for traffic, the stuff that's relatively easy to handle and process, and tend to cite into municipal courts. Sheriffs tend to cite into justice courts because that way the fine portion all goes to the county.
Yeah, 50 and 50, it would stay with the
county,
with the justice court and the sheriff's office.
Yeah, well, the justice court funnels it through to the county because they're county.
Right.
And most of the time, it's our understanding, but not always, state police cite into to circuit courts. But it's not always the case. The officer has the, for these level of offenses, they have the choice.
I'm concerned about that, Mr. Chair, because As we have our circuit courts available less and less time, even though we would like to go ahead and line their pockets as much as we possibly can, those tickets may not be, or those infractions may not be addressed. And I'm wondering how that plays into all of this.
Well, I think that's part of the global discussion, and that's why your questions are good ones, because as you can see, as we move through the various public safety budgets, whether those be state police, whether those be the court system, whether those be, that was part of our whole, as we had that overview that was directed by Marla Ray, who's in the back of the room to some degree, that Marla helped coordinate, and we sat with the other committees. This is just one example of how the programs get paid for, a lot of the programs in the criminal justice system, and the results that may occur, the unintended consequences of the decisions that this committee would make on victims' funds, on other types of funds that could really impact our community's ability to address the public safety needs.
So I guess that's why I was really concerned, Mr. Chair, was that there's been a lack of communication among some of the folks that I'm involved with, and I saw that in the presentation, that the judge could cite in to have a criminal go to a local mental health program, and the local mental health program has been shut down because of budgetary constraints, and the judge didn't know that. And so what happens is that he might as well just put the guy in prison right there rather than going through the process one more time, because if you don't have that kind of help for them, then, but it's a communication issue as I see it. So,
why don't you, Brad, while you're there, why don't you get the unitary assessment amounts on misdemeanors and felonies as well?
Chair Patrick, I don't have those memorized, but they're in 137-290. He probably has them. Bill probably has them in his presentation.
But Dale Penn can probably tell us.
I can't remember as much as I used to be able to remember just off the top of my head.
Mr. Chair, the unitary assessment on a felony is $105. On a misdemeanor, it's $65. Driving while intoxicated is $95. We said it's $35 for a violation. There is a $40 unitary assessment for on commercial vehicle operators for some speeding violations, and there's a $500 on convictions for certain person crimes. So,
thanks, Bill. Okay. Any other questions before we let Bill begin again?
Or continue.
Thanks, Bill.
Mr. Chair, I'll move on to page 4 and complicate the thing a little bit more.
Yes. I do want to back up because I thought he was going to stay on page 3. I don't want an answer to this now, but if I could get an answer, the items that were, particularly those items that were brought into the general fund in the last session, could we just get a brief just report, not right now, but where they were funded at the beginning of the last, the end of the session in 2001, where they ended up at the end of the fifth special session and the governor's reductions.
And I think Bill probably has that later.
And where they are, and where they are in the governor's proposed 2003 budget. Because I know one of them is completely lined out, actually.
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, there are some of these I can answer to you. There are other of these that just became part of an agency's general fund budget.
If you feel comfortable answering the question now, that's fine.
It's not comfortable. It's whether the detail exists. It's at some point some of these just were put into an agency. Say, the forensics piece for state police was put into the forensics budget as just an additional general fund piece. So there's no longer anything that separates. But the ones that I can find, we'll find for you. That just sort of didn't go into a larger pot somewhere. But you're right. I think you're thinking about the Children's Trust Fund.
Yeah,
that one we can answer you specifically.
For what you can find, I appreciate it.
Sure, we'll do that. Page 4 really shows the diagram of how the entire assessment system works in the judicial branch. And it starts really out at the top of the page with a single financial obligation that a person who is convicted of a crime or a violation receives when they leave the court system. And this was initially adopted in 1987 to simplify the process, where there was a whole variety of different fines and assessments that were added in different times, and it became a nightmare for the courts to administer. So the legislature in 1987 adopted a single financial obligation system. And that system has dollars flowing through it in really four different categories. The first category is just compensatory fines to victims. If the court fines someone convicted of a crime compensate the victim of that crime in sort of a non-specific way. And as the offender pays their judgment to the court, all the money that the court receives goes to the victims for compensatory fines until that part of the obligation is completely paid off. The next category is restitution. Restitution to a victim for a specific loss, whether it's a property damaged or stolen, whether it's medical costs, whether it's counseling costs for some kind of a response to the victimization. And those dollars flow to the victims, and they are, as each new dollar comes in, that's split 50-50 with Category 3, which are really the criminal fines and assessment account issues. And that's the set of things Brad was just talking to you about. Repayment for indigent defense costs, fines owed to the state, forfeited bail security, diversion fees, court costs, recouped attorney fees, the unitary assessment, cost of collections. And those all, again, are paid 50-50 with the restitution until finally those obligations are paid off. And finally, Category 4, pretty much everything else. It's the county assessments, the local split of fines, some specific intoxicated driver fees, rewards that are repaid by the defendant. And those are finally paid to the cities or counties, the state, organizations, or individuals until the obligation is fully paid off. One change in the Category 3, which, again, primarily the CFAA category, came from Senate Bill 70 in the last session. That directed the Judicial Department to prioritize the collection of delinquent accounts. There was believed to be a fair amount of money that was owed in a backlog, and they've begun to make efforts on that. It allowed them to recover third-party collection costs when they use a third party with the Department of Revenue or a private collection agency to recover costs. It allowed them to subtract their own collection fees from this revenue source before moving the money on to the Department of Revenue. And it took the Multnomah County parking fees, which had all previously been CFAA revenues, and shifted those to the general fund. So that pot of money then flows to the Department of Revenue. There are some off-the-top deductions, the small administrative costs the Department of Revenue incurs. There's a law enforcement medical liability account, the Department of Human Services, which covers some medical costs for folks who are in custody of local law enforcement, and some funds for the Intoxicated Driver Program at the Department of Human Services. Everything left over at that point goes in the criminal fines and assessment account. Those dollars are then split between the general fund and the public safety fund. Less, as Brad indicated, some child support payments reported by the Department of Justice that are taken off the proportion to go to the general fund. So that's sort of the system flow, and as we go through, we'll give you some more detail on kind of the critical pieces here to evaluate the budget.
Mr. Chair, this is the current allocation.
This is currently how the money flows through the system, and I think we're going to give you the allocation.
So this is the 0103.
This is how the system works. We'll talk to you how the money, where the money goes.
Most of this is in statute.
This is all in statute.
The foundation's in statute.
Yeah. Page 5 just shows you where the CFAA monies that come from the circuit courts, where they receive those, the amount that goes in the criminal fines assessment account. This is calendar year 2002. Before any collection costs are removed. And what it shows you is that the largest source of CFAA fines is just the broad category of different kind of fines that are imposed on folks convicted of crimes or offenses or violations. Second category is the unitary assessment, and that's only 29% of this revenue source. And again, we kind of mostly included this graph for you just to give you a sense of where the money's coming from. Infractions are 15%, recovery of indigent defense costs are 9%, and there's a variety of smaller pieces that contribute to the revenue here.
No, Mr. Chair, as I understand it, there would be also CFAA monies coming from the justice courts and municipal courts as well.
I don't have this kind of breakdown for them, but this will give you an indication of this, because the largest piece of money comes from the circuit courts, as we'll see shortly. So what's happened to the distribution then of CFAA revenues over time? Prior to the 1999 legislative session, all distributions were in statute. Each program that received funding was named in statute. There was a precise percentage of the total pot that would go to each of those programs, down to 4 decimal places. And there was also a specified percentage distribution that would go to the general fund as well. First major change in recent years was Senate Bill 82 in 1999. That added specific hard dollar caps to how much could be distributed to each of the programs. And the intent there, I believe, was to increase the transfer to the general fund to allow the subsequent legislature to review some options for program funding. Senate Bill 82 also limited the ability of the courts to reduce or waive assessments. There was some feeling that there was waiving of assessments than the legislature felt appropriate, so those provisions were put in Senate Bill 82. And finally, the authority of the Secretary of State to audit the courts to assure compliance was also established, and I'll return to that point briefly in a little while as well. As a result of the caps during the 1901 interim, there was a legislative executive work group that reviewed the whole distribution model. Representative Patridge was on that, Senator Schrader, Representative Westland, representatives from the governor's office, legislative fiscal, and BAM also participated in that. And the result of that really was House Bill 2877 in the last session. That fundamentally changed how the CFAA revenues were distributed and really eliminated all the distributions, the percentage, and the caps from statutes, and established a budget model for allocation of CFAA revenues to the general fund and programs. Again, very similar to the budget model that the lottery funds are allocated on. And I'll have some detail on how that works as the slides go forward. And again, Senate Bill 70 changed the statutes regarding a collection of funds owed to the court system, and the fiscal impact coming out of the session appeared to reduce the CFA revenues by about $3.1 million for the current biennium. The seventh page really shows you a model of how the current budget process for CFAA revenues works. There's initially a revenue split where the Ways and Means process will decide what percentage goes to the general fund and what percentage goes to the public safety fund. In the current biennium, that's 70.35% going to the general fund and 29.65% going to the public safety fund. The next part of the process is a specific allocation to individual programs, which that's sort of moving the cash, if you will, to programs. And the governor submitted Senate Bill 5513 for this session in order to both make the split on the between the general fund and the public safety fund and to make the allocations among the programs. And then as you see each of the agency appropriations bills, you will establish expenditure limitations for particular programs to allow them to spend that. And the limitations and the allocations will differ because some of the agencies will have some carry-forward dollars from the current biennium that will allow us to reduce the allocation and still support a slightly higher expenditure limitation. The priorities, on page 8 now, for how the public safety fund dollars are to be allocated were set in statute as part of House Bill 2877, and it established three priorities in order in which these funds are to be spent. The first priority was public safety training, standards, and facilities. The context of this was very much in the need that the governor and legislature at that time felt to establish a new public safety academy for DPSST in order to be able to expand our police training course from where we are now at 10 weeks to a 16-week program. The second priority was criminal injuries compensation, assistance to victims of crime, and children reasonably suspected of being victims of crime. And the third priority was the Emergency Medical Enhancement Account program that was established in the 1999 legislature that provides emergency medical services primarily in rural areas. House Bill 2877 also established that the Assembly shall first allocate enough resources to pay whatever debt service is owed on facility construction from prior decisions. So page 9 then shows you how the revenues have flown since close of session. When we left session last time, we expected to receive about $123.6 million to be split between the general fund and the public safety fund. That was our close of session forecast for the current biennium. The December 2002 forecast, which the governor's budget was built upon, projected $108 million revenue for 2001-2003, so a very significant drop from where we were in the close of session, and I'll suggest some reasons why we think that's occurred. The December 2002 forecast for 2003-2005 is even slightly lower at $103.6 million. Susan Klosterman from Judicial will be talking to you shortly about where they foresee revenues for 2003-2005 based on their March forecast.
Mr. Chair, just to make sure, as there was an issue, the lighter part of each bar is what comes from the Judicial Department, and the darker bar actually flows directly to the Department of Revenue, and that's the municipal court side of it. So,
yes,
and when Susan is in front of us, she'll be talking about the lighter part of the bar.
Right. We do have representatives from the Department of Revenue, but they've indicated that they are seeing their revenues flow about where they'd expected, so they will not be changing their forecast for March. So what are some of the reasons we think the revenues are dropping? We think probably the close of session forecast was too high. It was based on historical growth patterns that have not continued. There was a very substantial growth in this account over a number of years, what we knew then, we thought that was going to continue. It hasn't significantly. Some of those reasons may be there are fewer violations that are being issued by law enforcement this biennium than had occurred in the past. It's likely that the weak economy is limiting the ability of folks who are fined and assessed by the court system to be able to pay those. We think Senate Bill 70 is generating fewer revenues than projected during the 2001 session. So where we thought where there would be a drop of $3.1 million, it's likely that that's a more of a drop than because of that bill. There are some ongoing compliance and education issues with municipal and justice courts that are reducing revenues received by the state. There was a Secretary of State audit in April 2002 that addressed that issue, and made recommendations to the Department of Revenue how they could provide some additional education to the those courts and to do a better job of making sure they understand what the assessments were and what they were obligated to transfer to the state. And finally, what's not known yet is the impact of the budget reductions that will occur this session on court operations and law enforcement. Obviously, we're likely to see fewer state police officers. We're likely to see reductions in the court system, and those may well have some additional impact on this resource as well.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill, I guess that I'm a little bit apprehensive, and I would guess that the April 2002 audit may show this, but I'm a little bit apprehensive when I hear somebody tell me that they don't understand why we're not collecting as much as we have been collecting in the past when it relates to maybe the weak economy and people's inability to pay. They either were assessed the fine or they weren't assessed the fine, and we should know that, shouldn't we? I mean, don't we have a set of votes to show what our...
I was suggesting these are separate issues. That the Secretary of State found that some courts were unaware of what the current unitary assessment rates were. These are municipal and justice courts. They found that the unitary assessments were not always being remitted by the courts as required by law. And they found that some courts interpreted the unitary assessment statute to exclude the type of cases that they adjudicated. So the Secretary of State recommended that the Department of Revenue essentially do some more education work and some compliance work with those municipal and justice courts to attempt to remedy some of those issues.
I guess the thing that I'm concerned about is that when we talk about the weak economy limits people's ability to pay, I think we ought to know if we've assessed $200 million and we're only going to collect $110 million of it because of the weak economy, the inability to pay, we ought to know how much that is.
I think the courts can probably tell us some of those figures.
Okay.
I don't know if the municipal piece, that's all over the map from all the local jurisdictions.
And that was a education issue, as I understand.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I suspect they can tell us what the collections difference are. I don't know that they've actually gone out and been able to determine on an individual basis sort of what the reasons that the dollars aren't there. So. Okay, moving on to page 11 shows you what the impact of the fewer dollars are on the distributions of the criminal fines and assessment account. Close of session, we expected the general fund to get $86 million. That's the lighter bar graph there, and the public safety fund would get $36.2 million in revenue. There's about $1.4 million that would go to some other distributions and expenses. The December 2002 forecast dropped that to about $75 million to the general fund and $31.5 million for the public safety fund. So there was a drop in this biennium's allocation to the agencies. And the December 2002 forecast, there's an error there, as that last set of bars is 2002, reduced the general fund estimate again to $72 million and the public safety fund to $31 million. So and that's for the estimate for next biennium, and that's the estimate that the governor's budget was based upon. Again, Susan will talk to you about their more current forecast. Some of the issues that you'll be dealing with for the distribution in 2003-05, and I'm on page 12 now, are the governor's budget continues the split of CFAA revenues that was adopted budget for the 2001-03 session. Again, general fund at 70.35% and public safety fund at 29.65%. There was some expectation that issues like the DPSST Academy debt service would be dealt with by a shift in that distribution and a reduction of the amount of the general fund. The overall general fund constraints led to a decision not to make that reduction, because any change there obviously reduces the amount you have to spend in the general fund and has to be absorbed by reductions in other general fund programs. The governor's budget did believe there would be about an $800,000 carry forward in the public safety fund from this biennium to the next biennium. It's not clear that really will happen, but it's where we thought we would be back when we put the budget together. So to summarize this, and I guess this in my mind, this next point really kind of clarifies where the governor's budget was developed and the problem in the budget is we expect there would be $31.1 million in revenues in the 2003-05 biennium from this revenue source. The expenditure limitations that were approved in the 2001-03 legislatively adopted budget were $45 million. So the kind of continuing program level for next biennium is not much different from that. So what we needed to do was really shoehorn $45 million of expenditures into about $31 million of revenues. So the very significant reductions I'm going to talk to you about shortly were really driven by that difficulty and the decision not to shift more general fund revenue into these programs to maintain the 70-30 split. Some agencies have cash balances. Those are will be lower last biennium than they were this biennium, so it creates more of a problem for us. And then again, I said the issue on whether the split is, should be shifted or not becomes an issue. As you know, we have not increased debt service for the DPSST facility to construct a new academy. That's an issue the governor is still reviewing and has not ruled it out completely as he has construction of, say, new prisons. But we have not funded it in the initial governor's budget. And we also don't have any increased operational costs for the expanded basic police course when the new academy opens. Even were that to move forward promptly, that would not happen in the 03-05 biennium. But when we go to 16 weeks from 10 weeks and are operating a significantly new facility, that will be a noticeable cost increase at that time. So page 13, there's more detail here. I don't expect you to necessarily go program by program here. It shows you graphically the difference between the close of session expenditure limitations and the expenditure limitations in the governor's budget. And you can see there are significant differences all through this budget for all the programs that are funded there. Page 14 actually shows you the dollars program by program. The first part of the top part of the chart shows you where the resources were available. Thank Mr. Wilson for putting this part of the presentation together. Shows you the close of session, the resources available, the initial distributions, and then the split between the 70-30% to the general fund and 30% to the public safety fund, and then shows you what the allocations and the limitations were in the close of session. The second block shows you the same information for the governor's budget, and the third block shows you what the reduction is in the expenditure limitations between 2001-03 close of session and 2003-05 governor's budget. DPSST operations dropped 4.2%. The state police training dropped 28%. Most of the priority two, victims assistance programs dropped in the mid 20%. The public safety memorial fund dropped 75%, and then the category three, the emergency medical enhancement programs basically dropped 100%. The health division had a small carryover balance, so there is an expenditure limitation there, but there are no new allocations recommended for those four programs or for the public safety memorial fund. And the rest of the presentation I'll just go through to discuss what the different programs are, what they do, and give you a quick indication of what the impact of the governor's budget are. And we'll go through these by first priority, second priority, and third priority. First priority, as you recall, is the public safety training standards and facilities. The DPSST, this is their primary revenue source for their core criminal justice services program, the program that funds standards, certification, and training for law enforcement, corrections, and parole and probation officers. It also funds the debt service and COPs to construct the new training academy, and the 2003-05 budget will show about $700,000 in debt service on COPs that have already been sold for planning and site work for that new academy. And though that is owed regardless of what decision is made to continue that process. The reductions in the governor's budget basically eliminate 15 positions, 4 of the 10 positions in the regional training program, 3 positions in academy training and distance learning, reduces funding for child abuse training of officers by 50%, eliminates funding for the DARE program and specialized state police training, eliminates funding for the leadership program, including mandatory supervision and middle management training, eliminates the accreditation unit, reduces the curriculum unit, management and business services, service supplies, and eliminates capital outlay. So it's a significant reduction for their operational budget, and again, does not fund the moving forward with the academy.
Gerald, just one question relative to those COPs that were already sold. The dollar amount and the utilization of those funds, are we in any violation for not having commenced construction on that particular operation?
Mr. Chair, Robeson Butler, we are not. The collateral for those COPs was not tied to the construction of the facility. So we are not.
Dollar amount and where the
about
funds?
About $4.3 million, I think, was the total amount for that. It was spent on planning, site selection, developing the design documents, evaluating the sites, beginning to do the studies on the Salem site. So it took us to the point where we are now, where the design documents are almost complete. We would be ready to proceed with the construction documents if the project were continuing. We have some studies that are partway done, some that are finished. We're finishing up the permit process with the city. That's pretty much where we are.
The concern I guess I'd have then is that this amounts to about $360,000, $370,000 per year on $4.3 million of bonds. Are we paying nearly 10% interest, 8% interest on these bonds?
I'd have to go back and check on that.
They could be extremely short.
They're not 30 years. They're not
yeah,
30 years.
They're
not
extremely
the full construction. I'll get you the details.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Page 16, and we'll go through what the governor's budget has for the programs funded by criminal fines and assessment account, and we are in priority one again, which is public safety training standards and facilities. The other priority one program is Department of State Police training. Historically, that's funded between 45% and 60% of training for recruits and veteran officers in the state police. The impact of the reduction in the governor's budget would eliminate four of the 13 positions in the training division. That would be two sergeants and two troopers.
And, Mr. Chair, that there are also significant reductions in training and OSP budget from other fund sources, generally general fund sources, so this isn't the only training cut in that budget.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have any historic figures in terms of, I would assume with the layoffs and stuff, we're not going to be training too many new state troopers. Do we have any historic figures in terms of how much training they've been doing on existing troopers versus new troopers?
Why don't we will have Doug pose that question to state police.
They can give you that information on their ongoing training. And of course, we won't have a recruit school in the near future to increase the strength. The next one would probably be to replace officers who just retire through normal attrition, and I'm not sure when the date of that.
Well, so you've still got 130 to call back for attrition.
If they don't have other jobs. Bill also has the state police budget as well, so I'm sure between these two we will.
Moving on to page 17 now, we'll start the priority two programs, and again, those are programs to fund assistance of victims of crime and child abuse. The first program, Department of Justice, the Criminal Abuse Multidisciplinary Intervention Account, or the CAMI program, and Regional Child Abuse Assessment Centers, which is historically been considered a part of the CAMI program, although it is a separate funding line. This program provides funding at the county level to approve the assessment, investigation, and prosecution of child abuse cases. It allows teams of folks, state police, district attorneys, other social services folks, to work together on child abuse cases. Funding also provides for the regional child abuse assessment centers, which are able to work with individual children to determine the nature and history of some of the child abuse that may have happened to those folks. The impact of reduction in the governor's budget, it eliminates dollars for expert witnesses, specialized exam and assessments, and the purchase of interview equipment, reduces training to local law enforcement on the protocols for child abuse interviews, which is statutorily required, significantly reduces the medical staff, interviewers, and intake staff at abuse assessment centers, and eliminates some services such as law enforcement staff training and expert witness expenses as well. Next, Priority 2 program, Department of Justice, the Criminal Injuries Compensation Account, the Child Abuse Medical Assessments. This assists victims of crime with costs related to mental or physical injuries sustained as a result of crime. It certifies and provides funding to local victims' assistance program and includes funding for child abuse medical assessments. The impact of the governor's budget reduces payments for about 3,000 victims each year. It eliminates 40% of federal matching funds for every state dollar reduced for victims' compensation. Reduces victim advocate and restitution advocate positions, which will mean fewer victims will receive services, and reduces about 300 evaluations performed by qualified specialists for difficult cases of alleged child abuse and neglect. The next priority two programs in the Department of Human Services, the Domestic Violence Fund, that provides services, funding for 35 programs statewide that have crisis line, shelter, and related services to victims of domestic violence and their children. The impact of those reductions will be to reduce staff in the contracted programs that provide direct services to clients. These are, again, our contract services, so it's harder for us to give you a specific evaluation more than to say that. Sexual Assault Victims Fund, again, that also provides funding for intervention and support services to victims of sexual assault. Again, the reduction there will be to reduce contracted staff that work directly with clients. And page 20, the final Priority 2 program, the Department of Public Safety Standards Training Public Safety Memorial Fund. This provides an additional source of assistance to families of officers killed or permanently disabled in line of duty. The impact of reductions, the governor's budget eliminates the 2003-05 allocation. There will be some funds expected to carry over into the 2003-05 budget to provide some level of benefits for as long as those funds are available. Page 21 is the Priority 3 programs in the Oregon Health and Science University. The Emergency Medical Services Enhancement Account programs established in 1999. Those programs provide funding to the Office of Rural Health to enhance emergency medical services in rural areas. Provides funds to the Oregon Health Education Center to help training of emergency medical technicians, particularly in urban areas. And provides funds to the Oregon Poison Center. The governor's budget eliminates allocation for these three tier three programs for the 2003-05 budget.
Sure. Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, I've got another call that I've got to make over to the PUC in just a moment, but I wanted to express my concern. Much of my rural Oregon constituents receive some of their very vital services as a result of the emergency medical services grants, and the concern that I've got is we'll need to statutorily change the requirement for rural Oregon in order to not have my rural counties in serious violation of the law as a result of the fact that I got one stretch of highway that I think Highway 95 between Winnemucca, Nevada, and Caldwell, Idaho. I think we have about two calls a week, and probably about one or two calls a month for death on that highway. So my concern is that it's 180 miles with the town of Jordan Valley in between. And the difficulty that we've got is that I really need to have a statutory change if we're not going to fund these kinds of issues. And I appreciate the fact the budget crisis that we've got ourselves into, but I do need the assistance of whomever to effectuate that change so that I can tell my constituents, no, I wasn't able to help you get a cell phone or a repeater station set up, but at least you're not going to be arrested and hauled off to Salem to the jail where we don't have space because you couldn't do what we mandated you're supposed to do. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Final program in the Department in the Health Division, at Department of Human Services, again under the Emergency Medical Services Enhancement Account. The Health Division is funded to provide access to and quality of emergency medical services statewide. And again, the governor's budget eliminates this allocation. There is a small carryover for 2003-05 that would allow some expenditures for this program in the next biennium. And that concludes my testimony.
Thanks, Bill. Senator George, this was just an opportunity for them to show us how the governor handled the criminal claims and assessments, an overview. And we're not intending to make any decisions today. We do have the court here to assist us. Representative Hansen does have a question.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to the Police Safety Memorial Fund, is there residual money in that account? I mean, there's money already in it, so we're just not adding new money to it, or
Could you kind of explain how that fund works?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, there is continuing money in that account. We had included an expenditure limitation of $143,000 to continue some level of expenditures in that account. A portion of the CFA dollars that was originally allocated to that account was shifted to the Priority One program for DPSST to continue to avoid further reductions in the operations budget. But there is a significant reduction. It would limit their abilities to make new awards. We believe that all pending awards have been or will be funded from monies this biennium. There's also a federal award of about $260,000, as well as some federal education assistance as well. I understand it can take up to a year to have that payment made, which can create a problem for some families, but the fact that the resources were available was part of the thinking that went into this decision to reduce the funding.
How are the resources allocated out in the case of the death of an officer?
Mr. Representative Hansen, there's a $25,000 lump sum payment that I believe happens very quickly after that. Then the Public Safety Memorial Fund, to the extent that resources have been available, and I believe they have been to date, there are payments made for up to 12 months of mortgage payments. There is medical and dental insurance that is covered within statute, I believe, up to 5 years for a spouse and for children up to 18 or 23, depending on their educational status. And there is, I've forgotten one of the, I think that's all the
scholarship.
There is some opportunities for scholarship money as well.
I have before the end of the meeting, I have a little 1.5-page briefing I put together yesterday, and I'll hand that out to members on that because there are a lot of questions coming in on that.
All right. Other questions for Mr. McGee? Thanks, Bill. I appreciate you taking the time to do this. Susan, you want to come up?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Susan Klosterman. I'm the finance director with the Judicial Department, Office of the State Court Administrator. You have a one-page handout that Doug is giving to you, and I plan to talk about the 03-05 biennium forecast primarily and as it relates to our budget reduction planning, but I think I should just take a minute to talk about the current biennium and the close of session forecast and where we are today. And Bill and I have talked quite a bit about this, Mr. Chair, and see some good coming out of some changes in our forecasting model that started really last session. I think our forecasts have traditionally been overly conservative and low. Conservative might be too nice a word. As we started into the last regular session, we had a forecast that was pretty flat. It reflected the prior biennium's actual collections. And discussions during the session with Bill and with others thought that we should build in a rate of growth. And looking back over a 10-year history, which is what the Legislative Revenue Office did, they built in an 8% per annum growth rate. And that was an $11 million addition to the forecast. So as we look back now, we realize that was a period of time when there were new fees and fee increases, some changes to the structure. The entire CAFA was kind of put together back then, and we had new collection systems put in place in the mid-90s. So there were a lot of things that happened during that decade that haven't happened in the last year or two. So rather than having an almost 8% per annum growth, we are right now seeing a negative 3% rate of, I guess we'll call it growth, negative 3% rate of growth. I haven't quite figured out what to call that, really. So that explains, I think, the most of it. But as Bill pointed out, in addition to that, some of the Senate Bill 70 revenues have not materialized as we thought. The part of the bill that would have us pass the delinquent debt costs of the Department of Revenue private collection agencies onto the debtor. We had some issues getting those systems in place, so that was delayed for almost a year. So that's contributed another $3 million. And then we also have around $900,000 reduction for our budget reductions. As you may or may not know, effective March 1st, our short-term reduction plan is to defer processing of small claims and non-person misdemeanors. And the non-person misdemeanor money comes into the criminal fines and assessment account. So although there will still be receivables at March 1st that we will continue to collect on, there will be a reduction in this biennium, but not nearly as significant as it may be next biennium.
Susan, can you tell the committee what non-person... Can you give a description of what your
There's a reason Brad Swank is with us today. I've learned a lot as we've gone through budget reduction planning on what various crimes may or may not be, and I think I'm safe to say shoplifting. I think I'm safe to say it's property kinds of crime. So if someone burglarized your home and you weren't in it, I think that might be one. Actually, we've had quite a few discussions internally about what is or isn't on that list. So.
Brad, can you maybe expand for the committee a little bit what crimes those would be?
Well, those, as Susan said, again, for the record, my name is Brad Swank. I'm Special Counsel for Government Relations for the State Court Administrator's Office. They include, by and large, property crimes. They include crimes, certain burglary crimes that don't involve people or theft, those kinds of things, but some other business-related crimes. And just the kinds of crimes that don't involve people directly. And we are putting together a list. I didn't bring it with me, but those are the kinds of crimes that are involved.
Mr. Chair, no other questions on the current biennium. I'll move on to the 03-05 biennium because I think that's where our biggest issues are in terms of revenue forecasting today. I've given you a one-page handout that has a table on the back, and I'll start with the narrative on the front. And I think I need to talk a little bit, put this in context of us as a separate branch of government, and I don't say that just so... I get to say that we're unique because I'm sure everyone thinks that, but we do have a Chief Justice's recommended budget and are also, of course, affected and included in the governor's balanced budget. So that gives us a little different complexity to work with as we budget. And when we did the last revenue forecast, the December revenue forecast, at that time we were working with a Chief Justice's recommended budget, which would request a fully funded state court system and provide for funding that would allow us to perform all of the statutory and constitutional duties that we currently have. In other words, that we would continue to process all of the different kinds of cases that we currently process. Since that time, we have the governor's balanced budget, and the governor, because he has to present a balanced budget to the legislature, sets aside a sum of money for the judicial and the legislative branches. He expresses no opinion or judgment about what that would fund. So that's left a discussion between the Chief Justice and the legislature. But we've been trying to figure out how we start reflecting that potential reduction in the 03-05 biennium in official processes, and we met with the Legislative Fiscal Office and the Budget Management Analyst Bill here and the State Economist Tom Potowski to talk about how we should do now a forecast that reflects a reduced funding level in the courts in the 03-05 biennium. The trial court reduction in the governor's balanced budget, and I should say that it's usually our starting point, and I understand you have instructions to reduce that even further, so should make it clear that our forecast we're going to talk about today is based on the governor's balanced budget level of funding. So that is a $21 million reduction to the current operating levels before the Measure 28 failure and the other special session reductions we've taken this biennium so far. That equates to about a 14.3% reduction in the trial courts. Sounds like I'm doing my budget presentation, doesn't it? You'll see that in a few weeks, so I don't think that this is information that won't be helpful later. But if you want me to cut to the quick, I can do that too, Mr. Chair. I'm really not here doing a PR. So the 14.3% reduction to the courts is applied to staff primarily because we cannot reduce the judicial compensation during their term of office. So it does have a significant effect on the staff and their ability to process claims. So the reduction plan that we've put together for the trial courts has prioritized the different case categories, with the public safety and children case categories being at the top of our list. Those are the case categories we would give highest priority and continue to process first. One of the other things we talked about with Office of Economic Analysis was whether we needed to do this forecast for 0305 based on current law, or if we could assume the repeal of statutes, which would be the Chief Justice's request in a reduced operating, reduced budget environment, that we look at repealing statutes to remove some of the case responsibilities from our plate. So the decision was, and this is for the most part what happens, that the revenue forecast should be based on current law. So what we have put together for the March forecast is what we call thinning the soup forecast, which means that we assume that we will continue to process all of the case categories that we currently process, and those at the low end of the priority would be given lowest priority, and the effect on them and the delays in processing and the backlog would be greatest to those. So we've reflected the revenue reductions that go along with the delays and the loss in funding for the slowdown in case type processing. On the flip side, you'll see what that looks like, and this is actually what we submitted to the Office of Economic Analysis yesterday. And as we finalize this plan, we will make it a little more user-friendly. Right now it looks like a document for accountants and lawyers, and we'll try to explain what the different case categories are and also put some more words around the numbers. I need to say, too, that we have a short-term reduction plan that is going into place March 1st. We are still developing our long-term plan, and a part of that was revisiting our case category priorities, and they have been changed slightly and recommended to the Chief Justice to be in the order I presented on this table, with felonies person-to-person being near the top, and I'll say that because it might be something that you understand more than the mandamus. So Doug Wilson had a good question yesterday. Will this forecast change as our priorities change? And yes, that's true. We expect also that our forecast will change as we have discussions with the legislature about repealing statutes and also about other forms, perhaps, for hearing these different case types. But back to the table, Mr. Chair. The case types are listed in priority order. In the first column, we have what is the revenue as we would have forecast it without any budget reductions in 0305. In other words, that would be the Chief Justice's recommended budget. So those are the revenues before the governor's balanced budget reductions are in place. The middle column reflects the impact as we projected them of the governor's balanced budget, and this results because there are less staff to process cases, so backlogs grow. The final is column is the governor's balanced budget forecast, and those are the numbers that we've turned into the Office of Economic Analysis, and it shows to the criminal fines and assessment account then a reduction of $10 million or a $66 million forecast for the 0305 biennium.
Mr. Chair, what are the questions I asked of Susan yesterday of which of these lines are CFA related? And the ones are 2, 4, 8, 11, and 12. Am I right on that?
Yes, you are.
So if you want to look at directly those that are CFA related, the others flow into different parts of, including some going to the general fund directly.
Correct. if I could just draw to your attention, the violations, number 11, is the largest revenue source for the criminal fines and assessment account. And that is one of the case types that is under discussion to move up or down the list. In our short-term plan, it was lower on the list, but it wasn't affected much in just the last 4 months of the biennium. FPDs are another case type that are under discussion. Just those would, if those move down the list, could have an effect on the revenue forecast. I should say, though, that this thinning the soup forecast, as case types move a little bit, won't be nearly the effect of perhaps legislative conversations and decisions to just repeal statutes, because if that happens from the bottom up, the lowest priority cases are primarily general funded cases. They're filing fees. So that's a different group of accounts and programs that take the hit. And this is probably more information than anyone.
Better tell.
And I was going to put a different issue on the table, because I think probably every member of the committee here has been approached on this. And I can understand the court's rating of this as a very low priority. But you probably are aware that virtually every member here may have been approached by collection agencies, banks, credit unions, and numerous others. And their basic argument is that some of their things that they have to process through small claims take very little court time and produce more revenue than they cost. And I'm just going to put that on the record. And wondering why that's one of the first items probably being either put at the bottom of the list or maybe not even being processed at all.
I was going to say, Chair Hatch, Senator Devlin, it is not that we want to stop doing any of these things. First of all, you know, these are all things that we believe are part of a full-service court. The Chief Justice put together a budget reduction advisory committee, and the budget reduction advisory committee had to come up with some way of prioritizing the things that we do. What you see here is a list of what we do. And they based the priorities in their initial cut for the short term on providing the most protection to the public and the most protection to children. And the things that reflected protection to the public and to children are the things that were first on the list to protect, and the things that were not protection to the public were farthest down. Their decision on that was that small claims had the littlest to do with public safety or with the protection of children. And ultimately, if we don't have the staff and the resources to do everything, you have to prioritize and decide which things you're not going to do, and we don't have the staff to do everything that's on the list.
I fully agree with that analysis in terms of protection of the public. I think the argument that's being made, and although those fees for small claims go into the general fund and don't go directly to the court, that in some ways you're giving up revenue that would make it easier to fund some of those things that protect the public. And
Chair Patridge, Senator Devlin, that's a legitimate policy argument. But if you have,
a revenue producing center, is what I'm saying, is why give up the revenue producing center.
Well, we do this. We've done the same thing. So, legislatures tend to do the same thing on occasion too. So, I think that's a policy discussion that we need to have with the court. We also have to remember that the legislature, we can't mandate what the court does or does not do. We can give them statutory authority to hear things, but they are an independent branch of government, and we can't tell them. They need to prioritize small claims above something else. That's not within the purview of the legislature to do that, unless you want to take away their other responsibilities. So, I guess that's how
I
look.
I'm just trying to deal with the numerous requests that we are getting and telephone calls and letters.
And I think, Mr. Chairman, we've discussed this at length, as you can imagine, and from a business perspective, that would be the answer. But to make the point, at the top of our list, felonies is not a revenue producer, but it's not something we feel we can quit doing. But this is a discussion that we welcome and intend, and I know the Chief Justice wants to have these discussions with you in terms of the priorities and also what requirements should stay or not with the court.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And certainly I agree with much of what Senator Devlin has been saying and your points in terms of that we can't instruct the court in terms of what, how to set the priorities. But certainly we can have that discussion during the, it might be fruitful to have that discussion during the budget time.
I think we intend to have that discussion during the budget time, and I think we intend to take a look at what we can to keep the doors of the courthouse is open for all citizens that need to redress their grievances, whether they be businesses or individuals.
The real challenge will be how to turn felonies into a problem.
Thank you. Bill.
Mr. Chair, just one point on the forecast, and perhaps just to state the obvious, but the $10.5 million reduction in the criminal fines assessment account that Susan talked about, just to remind you that would go into this formula for a split between the general fund and the public safety fund. And if you were to maintain a 70-30 split in the governor's budget, that would be a $7 million hit to the general fund and about a $3 million hit to the public safety fund.
And just, Bill, for clarification, too, the governor didn't take into account when he submitted the governor's balanced budget the general fund revenue loss that is estimated in here. So we have an additional $10 million plus hole based upon forecast. Okay. Well, I appreciate everyone being here today. I certainly hope this was educational. It was intended to be instructive and educational so that everyone is prepared to have the policy discussion and to look at those programs as we move forward. I think Doug is passing out the briefing he prepared. We have a court in front of us, so we can say it's a brief on the Public Safety Memorial Fund. For those, I think everyone here knows Robin Lamont. Robin has joined us here as well, snuck in the back. Robin will be our analyst on the budget for the court. And so, a lot of these issues Robin has wrestled with and was in on all the meetings on the criminal fines and assessments account during the last two bienniums that I've been involved in it and probably before that. And I didn't know that Robin used to work for the court as an analyst in Lane County. So that's years ago. But I appreciate everyone being here. And at this point in time, I'm going to close the committee today. And I appreciate you all coming. And, next week. Next week, the committee is canceled. We are doing the spade work for the 01-03 biennium. Many of you are involved, and I think all of you have been involved at some degree or another and are aware of that fact. However, we may be asked, there are a couple grant requests that are out there that are public safety related, so we may ask for a real short meeting to review the grant requests. So I would ask that if you could preserve at least from maybe 1 to 1:30 on your days and not have your assistants book those up. We'll try and get to you probably tomorrow, I would imagine, or Monday at the latest as to whether we're going to handle those or whether those will just go to the Full Ways and Means Committee. All right? So with that, we are adjourned.